Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with Men's Health's Andrew Tracy about unorthodox training methods.
He is a man who challenges the standard. Should we say that?
I think that's right. He challenges the status quo.
Yeah. So you'll hear in the episode, Andrew's done a lot of events. Men's Health might ring a few bells for people. It's a very popular magazine, but it might not be. You centre yourself, oh, doesn't sound very runningy. Well, this guy knows how to force himself to do rather extreme challenges, but his approach and the training that he uses to get there isn't just banking loads of mileage. So yeah, we wanted to sit down with him and have a chat about how he approaches these things, because it's fairly fascinating. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a significant sort of minority of runners who maybe don't love putting in loads of miles, want to achieve ambitious goals, but maybe want to look at different ways of getting there. And I think this is the episode for you, I think.
Let's just skirt over our own running. I'm injured, you're sick. So that's covered that off.
Great.
What else is happening, Rick?
No, that's it, isn't it? You and I's running isn't particularly impressive at the minute. I'm still all roads are leading to the Orion 15. So just got to start feeling a bit better to do that. And then, that'll be it.
Great. Well, that's good. I mean, even at our best, it was never much to talk about. But right now, it's really not.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, good.
Let's get him on. Let's get on to Guest of the Week.
Let's do it. Guest of the Week. Here in the studio. Guest of the Week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown. Today we're talking unorthodox training approaches to running. And who better to talk to on this subject than Men's Health Fitness Director, but more crucially, a man who has experimented and completed a number of incredibly difficult challenges where running has sat at the centre of them. So welcome to the Runner's World podcast, Andrew Tracy.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming on. Just so we can get a sense of your like endurance CV, I guess. Could you give us a sense of some of the long distance or big challenges that you've done in the past?
We were just discussing this before we started rolling, and then as you were introing there, I was like thinking, oh, and this. I would never think of myself as an endurance athlete.
Okay.
And I wouldn't say hybrid athlete, because everyone says that now. But yeah. I think the first, when I'm thinking back now, years and years and years ago, I'd run marathon distance already, and was just as much of a runner as you know anyone else who goes for a run. I decided one New Year's Day. Myself and my brother have this tradition where we try and do something really hard on New Year's Day every day. Initially, years and years ago, it was kind of a way to
sweat out the hangover,
or not be, you know, act as a sort of
natural
mental deterrent to not being too hungover. We did a sprint distance, an Olympic distance triathlon, but with no training or anything. We just found out which swimming pool would be open on New Year's Day at a local hotel, and did like a distance triathlon, and I was like, okay, that wasn't anywhere near as bad as I thought it would be. And this is going back a few years as well, before people started just doing like, I did 9,000 marathons in a row.
Yeah,
that sort of, I think, has not lowered the barrier for entry, but definitely made people think a lot more about, oh, maybe I can do that stuff. But this was my first, like, oh, okay, that's not too bad.
And that then spurred on a whole new thing, like this New Year's Day thing. The one you did the other day, well, this New Year, was up and down Snowdonia.
Mm. So we do another thing we do every year. This is a separate. God, we do way too many things every year. That's difficult. This is a separate thing, but we've always done for charity an event where we do 24 CrossFit Hero workouts, which are CrossFit workouts dedicated to servicemen and women who have given their life in the line of duty, and they're generally speaking, like, just really tough. Like, so okay. They're really hard grinders of CrossFit workouts. And we've done for probably 6 or 7 years now, I think, actually. We try and do 24 in 24. We don't try. We do 24 in 24 hours, on the hour, every hour. And then progressively, we tried to make that tougher. One year, we decided we wanted to see if we could do that. And the game is, like, what's the most stupid thing we can do as well as doing this?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's pretty stupid in and of itself. We decided we wanted to see if we could fit in... initially, it was like, can we fit in a marathon between all these workouts? And then it escalated to an ultra marathon, because we kind of set a distance, and that distance happened to be like 70 kilometers. And we literally traveled that. We chucked all of the kit. So this is one of my brothers. And I chucked all of the kit into a flatbed transit driven by our other brother. And we made a list of points, like 24 points along this 70 kilometer route, and we just had to be there every hour. And he got the kit out for us, so we'd get there every hour, and we'd do, you know, like 100 muscle ups for time, and then just keep running again. So it was essentially like do a tough conditioning workout and then keep running. And it's pretty brutal. It's like 70 kilometers, but it spread out over 24 hours. So although it's 20, yeah. it's all of that work. It's
with a workout every hour.
Yeah.
And
then this year just been, we were like, right, how can we top that again? And we decided we would see how many ascents of Mount Snowdon, like from the Pig Track car park up the Pig Track to the top of Snowdon, we could accumulate in 24 hours while still doing these 24 hero workouts. And I'd been a few times in the weeks prior. So to make it plain, we had all the kit in a van in the car park.
Yeah. Okay.
And we just would just run. The plan was just to run back and forward from the summit back down. And we had like a handful of body weight. So there's some of the hero workouts are body weight only work. They're still really tough, and they incorporate a lot of running in them. So, you know, it'll be something like a 20-minute AMRAP, as many rounds as possible, of 24 walking lunges, 24 press-ups, 24 burpees, 400-meter run. And you just do that continuously for 24 minutes.
Yeah.
And we had a handful of those so that in the hours when we were still on the hill, we could do one of those on the mountain.
What did the walkers make of this?
Well, this is the interesting thing. So I'd been up a few weeks before to do a few time trials.
Yeah.
And I love uphill and downhill running. I wouldn't say running is something I love. I'll do it all the time, but it's not something that, like, gets my curiosity. I wouldn't say I was passionate about it.
Okay.
Right.
It definitely serves a purpose, and I really do enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it's never something I don't have a lot of curiosity about it like I do with my other forms of training. But this, I love running up hills, I love trail running. I think that's what I need. I need that sort of novelty. So I'd gone and done like a time trial, and I didn't gas it, and I was 3 hours up and down fairly comfortably.
Okay.
I gave it some beans on the way down because I was excited, but on the way up.
Because it's fun.
It's fun. It's downhill, right? The day we picked to do it, it didn't stop snowing all day. It was the worst condition. And I think just getting the first ascent, because of the conditions, there were patches of it you just couldn't run because it was too icy.
Yeah.
So we ran when we could, but then some of the time, you know, you slow to a crawl. And it just kept snowing and it kept snowing and it kept snowing. And the snow, to its credit, did actually improve the conditions a little bit because it sort of covers the ice, right? But then you're running in a foot deep of snow, so that presents its own problem. The plan was to do 6 ascents, descents. We managed 3.
Okay.
In that 24 hours with the rest of the workouts before we were like, we need to get off. We could have done it, but we wouldn't have done the workouts as well, if that makes sense. And that had to be the first priority. So yeah, up and down Snowdon three times, but we are going to go back in the summer because we were on the night, we were like, right, this actually, we owe this mountain six ascents, descents, because we said we were going to do that. And it just wasn't feasible.
Yeah, you could get bad weather in the summer, probably not quite as bad as that, but...
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. I mean, it rained when I'd gone to do the time trial thing like the few weeks before, but a bit of rain is refreshing, if anything, right? But the snow was not it. You just couldn't run.
You talked about like the term hybrid athlete, which actually I hadn't heard much of before. For anyone who's listening is kind of curious about that term and the rise of the hybrid athlete, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So I think the term has existed for years and years. There's a guy called Alex Vieda, who I don't know if he coined the term, but it definitely predates the current sort of rise and usage of the term. And essentially, it's just concurrent training for more than one capacity at the same time would be the definition.
Okay.
Like training different strength capacities, including endurance, concurrently. Now, the way it's sort of used on social media now tends to mean, or I'd say it's indicative of, people who do take their strength training very seriously, but also take their endurance training and events very seriously.
Okay.
So I would say it's less like, because we've always had people, right, who lift and do cardio, right?
Sure.
That, I mean, they go for a run. Or we've always had people who run and they do strength training to supplement and support their running.
They should do.
Yeah. But yeah, I would say hybrid training is just someone was asking me to sort of define this, like what's the difference the other day. And I would just say hybrid training is an actual focus on both,
right,
as opposed to one just supplements the other, or one is ancillary to the other. So hybrid training, as it's used now, I would say means taking your strength training very seriously, but also your endurance training, and actually you're not just going out for a run anymore. You were doing marathons, you're doing ultras, and
sure,
I think this speaks to what I was previously saying about now the barrier to entry, the doors seem wide open now. Mm. People like it. What once upon a time was, you know, running a marathon was like the
mystical thing. We used
the word marathon to mean something, right? It's indicative of something. But now people are running 100 like ultras, and hybrid training, I would just say, is, I don't know if it might be the thing that's made this accessibility of doing these longer distances. You know, you can't discount the fact that probably is a lot to do with the strength and durability that you're going to gain from resistance training. So it's a new thing, but I think it's a thing that's almost created itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, it's never, time isn't apart from like 24 hours being like the end result, it's a very different time format than to like, should we say, a traditional approach to running, be it a PB or a sort of like very much like that time specific end goal, rather than much like the things it's dominated by finishing a certain number of things in a time frame. So I think that there's that sort of like perhaps that distance between it all. But what I wanted to get back to was, so you mentioned the Ironman and the training and the fact that you were even specific training for the Ironman wasn't just what most people would conceive to be generic Ironman training. It was probably, as you say, you were lifting a lot, and then all these other approaches, all these other events that you've done at the sort of the foundation of your approach to it. It's not been a traditional like mileage based thing. You've always seen that effort is relatable to some other condition, as in like you'll train yourself to be good aerobically, but not by running, but by just doing whatever it is that you need to do. And that translates to being able to run more. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think it's that then supports itself in a way, because, you know, as you said, people probably should be doing resistance training to support their running. Like, you know, your body is the medium you use to run. And the stronger it is, the bigger a buffer you've got between yourself and an injury. You know, it's just what I just call durability. So maybe initially this approach for me like sprung up from a number of things. So when the Ironman I was training for in the same year, when you're pre-COVID, in the year that I was training for that. I also did a couple of strongman competitions and just various bits like that. And I was still, you know, doing CrossFit-y style competitions. So I had to have that sort of training in anyway. So I began to look at ways that I could hybridize the aerobic stimulus without necessarily just running, because running has a, you know, there's still a degree of wear and tear, and it's always interesting to me that people see it as like the easy thing to do.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, running's like the beginner's thing to do. Like, it's a weird thing because it's a lot, especially over long distances, it's a lot of work on your, it's a lot of wear and tear on your body. So I kind of thought of it the same as I would think in anything else in training, which is like, what's the stimulus I'm trying to achieve here? What's the adaptation I'm trying to achieve here? And is there a way to continue sort of eking out this adaptation without necessarily like burning myself out? And so I, you know, just to make this like really obvious, I would do very long resistance-based workouts. So you know, circuits would be an easy way to say it, that may incorporate short bursts of running, but overall the idea was to have a sort of aerobic stimulus for 60 plus minutes.
Okay,
but that would incorporate, I'd then work into that things that I also know are going to be advantageous, or adaptations I know that are going to be good for my running. So it would be a lot of posterior chain based work, a lot of single leg based work, and all of this operated with sort of minimal rest period and loaded in such a way that you could continue at an aerobic pace for 60 plus minutes without just running. Now, does it translate exactly? Like, obviously not, because running is still a skill, but for me, it's still base building. You're still building that aerobic base. And I know some people do disagree with this. And then I would train running like a skill. I would go out and run like anyone else would in run training distances and for time and intervals and pace. But I would use my lifting to continue getting that sort of aerobic stimulus over whatever time frame.
We've had a chat that's developing still, but it's a sort of the long slow run, the bedrock of the marathon and any endurance feat. There's a sort of, you know, a very genuine assumption that that's a crucial part of it. But is there a way of approaching it differently? Now, we were sort of, if you're talking about the sort of components of a long run which are beneficial, is the adaptation to time on feet and basically that low base end endurance capacity. And what metrics are you using to track that? Is it heart rate? Is it output? Like, there's all these different things. Now, we were having a chat about if you went for an equivalent time on feet, but walking with a weighted vest, but at enough of an effort to stimulate an equivalent heart rate. So say if you're doing your, say, zone two, say 130 beats per minute, or whatever it is, if you went for a power hike, but weighted up for 4 hours, are you doing enough there to sort of stimulate or basically copy the effort from a long run, but in a different format?
In a way that's less kind of abrasive to your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. I think you would lose some specificity.
Yes.
And I think that's always the thing. So obviously if you're training for a marathon or anything, you want your training to try to be as close to the thing you're trying to do. But I think that there's an injury risk with running that's quite high. So actually, if you can hack it a little bit, as you're saying, like a weighted vest, probably the injury risk of weighted vest is much lower. And you could certainly, for an ultra, if you were going out trying to run 4 or 5 hours, could you hike 4 or 5 hours and get lots of the same adaptations? I think probably could. Yeah, you've done a bit of rucking, haven't you?
This is a prime example of, if you are, so everyone talks about zone two training, like now, you know, oddly enough, it's all the same coaches that a few years ago, especially in strength circuits, were like, cardio is going to, you know, don't do cardio, just to see less, who are now like, make sure you're doing your zone two training.
Yeah.
If your goal, if you set out, and as you said, there's the specificity, you need to be getting the time on your feet because you need to train for what you're training for. Yeah. There's very few things that you're going to be able to do that are then going to allow you to go out and run a marathon. But something I realized was that I could do a fairly long distance with very little training. And when I start thinking like, why is that?
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to, or I sort of realized that it probably comes down to the fact that I did spend a lot of time on my feet doing, and I mean over the course of days. So I used to run a business in events,
okay,
at events construction, and you know, just 12 hours a day of carrying stuff. Now, I would still find a run tough, but I would not break down. It was literally just a case of like, yeah, this is tough. It should feel tough because I don't run a lot. And then that got me thinking about exactly that. Like, well, to some degree, I am spending a lot of time on my feet in a heart rate that's fairly well parallels this.
Okay, yeah.
So let's backwards engineer that. And as you say, you're not going to get the skill of running, and you're not going to get, if nothing else, take all the science away, it's just going to feel horrible because you're going to be very surprised. I'm not used to this.
Yeah.
But I do think by getting in the time on your feet with in a loaded manner, so you're going slower, it's far less impact. But by adding the load and just pushing yourself into that same heart rate zone, or I don't ever train in heart rate zones really, but into that same
effort
zone. If you're doing that over a similar sort of distance, it's going to enable you to still get that same zone two stimulus without necessarily putting in the wear and tear on your body.
Okay.
So I think that's great.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You still have to go. If I was to, so now for instance, it's a little bit different, but I need, for something I'm doing, I need to have a very fast 5K time.
Okay.
Now doing, it's going to help to build my base, but I still need to be running intervals and I still need to be running hard 5Ks. But if I wanted to do a marathon again now, a large part of my training for me would be long, low and slow. Like I call it low and slow if you're doing something at a relatively low heart rate for a long distance, but with load. You're removing the impact and the potential wear and tear, but you're still getting that heart rate. You're still getting that heart rate stimulus. And I think if you are saying, oh, I'm out to do a zone two run, and if that is really your intention, it's worth thinking about whether or not it actually needs to be a run. Like, is there something else that might actually allow you a little bit more recovery on the legs? Be less injurious. And to be clear, I don't want to nocebo anybody. Like, statistically, yes, you're probably more likely to get injured running, but that's just, you know, that's statistics are just surface area running, isn't it? If you're running a lot, it doesn't mean it's necessarily injurious. It just means that it's something you're doing for hours and hours and hours. I think there's merit there. I think especially if you've hit a point in your training, say, where you potentially your long, slow runs are feeling tough because of injury or just niggles. If you can get into the same heart rate zone, and people do this with, you know, cycling, right? But it's a lot closer to the stimulus. And also you're going to get the benefits, the anterior core and posterior chain benefits, especially if you've got a heavy-ish backpack.
Yeah.
There's a lot of upper body benefits there. And in my experience, where a lot of runners who only run and are like evangelical about not strength training, where I see them fall apart, especially people I've worked with, is eventually they hit a certain point in the race where they're just dragging their upper body with them. Like it's no longer a willing participant in this race. You know, they've broken down. Whereas a strong posterior core, strong posterior chain, and, you know, good trunk, a strong posture is, you know, that's a benefit. That's a benefit in a race.
I think it's a really good training hack. And I mean, there's a few really good ultra runners who do like weighted vests. So Damien Hall writes for the Mag, is a big weighted vest hiking enthusiast.
He's also a day-to-day wearer though, isn't he?
Yeah, he'll do it day-to-day as well. Yeah, I think he does a bit of day-to-day stuff.
So he's gone that sort of extra level of being like, when you're doing the kids, dropping the kids off, you know, you walk to the school and you put your vest on because it's time under load. And that even in itself is a stimulus.
Yeah, I keep in my work backpack, or it's the backpack I take everywhere, I keep the plates from a loaded vest, because walking around in a loaded vest is a bit odd. I'm an odd guy, but even for me that's a bridge too far. So in my work backpack, I keep the plates from my weighted vest in the laptop slip in the back. So my work bag always invariably weighs 20 odd kilos. By just doing that, you are adding in this sort of incidental work. So even just walking to the tube in the morning, walking to the train station in the morning, walking from the tube to work, maybe going for a walk at lunchtime, by adding that extra bit in, you're getting that little bit of extra stimulus, and it really is just incidental work.
Yeah.
And I think particularly if you have a sort of sedentary job, that's a great way to capitalize on the movement you can get, because it's difficult. You work in an office, right? It is. There's only so many like trips to yeah. One hack I found is I drink way too much water, because then you're hydrated, but you get up for a toilet a lot, and it's just it's movement hack.
That's good. I like that.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You said that you weren't someone who likes to sort of do training for hours on end. Do you think that the kind of more hybrid approach, the kind of approach that I think you're talking about, is just less boring perhaps than what a kind of orthodox Ironman training might be, or even orthodox marathon training?
I think, yeah, for many people, this is kind of another aspect of what I mean to like, it's opened the floodgates to endurance training, because people are going, oh, I don't just have to go out for, it can be so much more than that. And some people need that.
That's for sure.
That's the buy-in. Some people need all of the trimmings, right? Whereas for some people, and I think about this a lot, I wish that I was wired in such a way that just running did it for me.
Yeah. Because
it would be so much simpler. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
I think about, I was running intervals outside my house the other day, and I was running hard intervals, and it was fun. It was really fun. And in that, like taking in that good, like feeling how fun it was, I was like, wouldn't it be so simple if this was all I wanted to do? And, I have body composition goals and I have strength goals and things, so it can't be like that.
Yeah.
But I did think, wouldn't that be cool?
Wouldn't it be
nice?
Yeah.
To just, and I'm not saying this to diminish running at all. I'm saying like, it's so good. I wish that I just liked running.
Yeah. But I think a lot of runners probably feel the same about gym. They don't like the gym. Like it's not their environment. They don't feel naturally comfortable there, but they know they have to do it if they want to run more. So they kind of force themselves to do it, and it supplements the training that they're doing. I think it's an equivalent. It's just that thing of just being like, naturally, people are way more interested in that trigger, that little spark of like, yeah, I want to do that. But there's these other things that kind of actually sit alongside.
This is what I want to do, but this is what I have to do, isn't it? It's like anything in life, there's like there's nuts and bolts that you have to sort of tighten as part of it. Yeah,
but I like that. I mean, a good mate of mine is signed up for a marathon in May, and he's like more your build basically, so like a bit bigger than a normal runner, and he likes being that build, and he likes going to the gym. And I was like, I don't think that you want to sign up to a 5 days a week running program, and the things that you actually like doing, you should stay in, and you should try and run 3 times a week. I do think that's like the minimum really for improvement, and you can keep those other things in, and you can just think about becoming like a really good endurance athlete rather than just becoming a good runner. And I think that approach is, from a kind of like interest and buy-in for him, was really much more appealing than like Yes, this is the plan for
the big
you.
Stamp of it, you have to be the runner.
Identity change.
We wouldn't have to change your identity to run a marathon. And I think that's actually a really good thing that we should. Good message for us is that you don't have to. It's not one size fits all. There's other ways in.
And I always think as well, with motivations and goal setting, a really overlooked thing is like, what aren't you willing to give up? Because so many people, you know, it's that classic adage of like you climb up a ladder to realize it was leant up against the wrong wall. But your friend could very easily have done the 5 day, you know, have strength trained for so long or bodybuilding for so long and get used to looking a certain way and it just becomes by the by. And then you go and do running and you don't really realize, oh, this is the thing I like about it. I like being at this strength, or I just like the training. Or, and you go and you're like, right, I want to be a really good, I want a 2.5 hour marathon time, whatever it may be. And then you're like, oh, actually what I wanted was to do some running, but still be this build and still be this and still be that.
Yeah.
And it's a really important thing that I think about with you know, goal setting, for want of a better word, is you have to be cognizant of what you don't want to lose. You have to think about the thing you do not want to give up. You know, if you're like, you could do this, you could have the 2.5 hour marathon, but this is what you're going to lose. And it's not always, I think this is something that's getting better now. But historically, there has been that weird sort of forced dichotomy, hasn't there? And I always think it's been like this sort of Cold War / mutually assured thing where endurance runners, it's almost like there's a pact between, going back to like the 90s and the 80s here, but endurance athletes and strength athletes, where strength athletes, bodybuilders, whatever, guys who just work out, have this thing where they say, oh, I can't do cardio because I'll lose all my gains. Yeah. Wink, wink, as like a little excuse for why they get out of breath walking up a flight of stairs. And then you've got endurance athletes who are like, yeah, the thing is, I can't actually lift weights because of I don't want to put too much mass on. I can't get too bulky.
Yeah.
And it was like both sides sort of winking at each other, being like, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone that. And then you've seen, and I think this has put a lot of people's nose out of joint as well. You've seen, there's some really classic examples that come to mind, but like bigger guys who have suddenly gone and look, they're not running 2 hour marathons, obviously.
Yeah.
But the fact that guys who look like they should be on Gladiators are finishing marathons in like sub 4 hour, like respectable times.
Has,
I think that's put a lot of people's nose out of joint in both sides, because then the guys who work out and look good and whatever, you know, look muscular, whatever it may be, are going, oh, actually, I don't have to give this up.
Yeah. Yeah.
In order to like, have a good enough engine to actually like run a lap of a football pitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's guys on the other side going like, I'm like pretty weak and brittle. And I've been sort of excusing myself because I'm like, look, I just can't afford to bulk up. And suddenly there's all these other guys in the middle who are doing well. And I think that has shone a little bit of a light of that. Like it's a false dichotomy.
Yeah,
it's not one or the other.
I think that, as you said, like, I think body image and associated body types with a certain sport is a real danger. Like actually real, like it's a danger zone of just being like, I don't look like an archetypal runner. Sure. If we're going to go for the skinny runner type, nor do you. Rick, you probably more do fit into that sort of thing. But that's not correct.
Yeah.
Like that's not right. Like that, you know, there's, as you said, like even in the world of professional stuff, you look at someone like Christian Blumenfeld, right? Champion, Ironman triathlete guy. Now he's not like by any means big, but he's stockier. He's more like his frame is slightly bigger than the Brownleys.
Sure. Yeah.
If you put them next to each other, they wouldn't look body type identical. Mm. And I just sort of, you do actually see this that more and more creeping in, actually, that there's this, it's an engine we're talking about. We're not talking about like physicality, like size and shape. It's actually just more about more about the engine.
Yeah, there's more variety
that,
in people.
Yeah, I think as things evolve, it was obviously like way more capable, or certainly people should feel that regardless of that, I'm too muscular or I'm too big for that. It's not. It's about the capacity that you have.
I think as well, it's like a misunderstanding of selection. And if we only see the thin end of the wedge. We only see the famous people in any pursuit. Obviously, they're famous. So if you're looking at the top end, I think there's a sort of tendency to put the cart before the horse, where people go, well, they like look this way because they do this, or that you have to look this way. But actually, it's just at the thin end of the wedge, this certain body shapes are maybe selected for more. Sure. It's not a case of that person is going, I need to get my body to this certain shape and size in order to be good at this. It's that they're very good at this, and this is what they happen to look like. And you'll find there's always outliers, but at the thin end of the wedge, you get a sort of coalescence of certain...
The Venn diagram.
Exactly. It starts to sort of separate out a little bit, and then you can end up with... But the danger then is if you're only seeing the thin end of the wedge, you're then going, okay, well, I need to look like that in order to do this. But the thing is, you're not going to do what he... You're not going to run the 2.5-hour marathon, so don't worry about that. Don't worry about looking like him in order to do what he does, because you're not going to do what he does anyway. So just aim to, you know, the running, if it's running, like aim to run the fastest marathon you can.
Like
independent of what you look like. And then along the way that you're going to come into those other variables where you're like, well, I'm getting dinged up a little bit, so maybe I should do some strength training to support my durability. Are you going to lift and then suddenly in a 3-month period, in a year's period, be like, I'm just way too big for this sport? Like, it's just not, realistically, it's not going to happen. And if it does, you're like a genetic outlier, and maybe just shift into like a strength sport anyway, because you are the thin end of another wedge.
Yeah, you're an absolute freak.
But like, you know, there's signs that you're getting too big before you get too big. Normally a long time before it, like it's a slow process.
For sure. And also I think if you're doing regular aerobic, kind of classic aerobic exercise, it's extremely difficult to actually lift weights and put on a significant amount of weight. And just I think the energy in, energy out equation just doesn't...
It'd be a full-time job to do both. Like they, you know, hybrid athletes now, like people who are like genuinely... Like they are running ultra marathons whilst also having, you know, triple body weight deadlifts. You're not doing that without, to do that, do that at a high end, there's a lot of planning that's got to go into that, and a lot of food that's got to go. It is a case of like, if you want to be strong and build muscle at the same time as doing, and you need to be putting back in every calorie you expend plus more.
Mm.
So the idea that it's going to happen, that you're accidentally going to get to... I don't think we've seen now that paradigm is just wrong anyway, right? Like strength training supports running. As far as I'm concerned, like muscle mass is... you only have a propensity to carry so much muscle mass as well. That's the thing. Like you... But this is... I've been bigger before, but I'm not naturally a big guy. There's only so much I can carry.
Yeah.
And even at... Even if I could snap my fingers right now and get to like my genetic limit of muscle mass, I don't think there's so much there that would like hinder my endurance ability.
Sure. Yeah.
What can happen is you can put on too much body fat.
Yeah.
And now that's non-functional mass.
Yeah.
And that's a lot easier to put on the muscle. So I think that maybe it's a three-ball problem, isn't it? There's a difference between putting on muscle and putting on strength. You don't have to put on, you can train in a certain way to not, again, this is all a moot point because as we say, it's really hard to put on muscle anyway. Depending on how you lift and how you train, you might not necessarily even gain size. You can gain to a certain degree, not so much if you're a beginner, you can gain strength and durability without gaining size, quite readily. Like lots and lots of people, especially as if you train for a while, lots and lots of people get progressively stronger without gaining in the way of muscle mass. And if you were genuinely worried, like, oh, I don't want to, maybe it's a body image thing, who knows, but you don't want to add any size, you can lift in a way that's not going to be conducive to adding muscle mass, but will still support your frame, your posture for running.
Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the Runners World podcast, talking about unorthodox ways of training. I think it's really, really interesting. It made me think a little bit about what I'm doing
going,
and not doing.
Going for a big ruck, aren't you?
I think rucking is actually the greatest cross training activity lots of people haven't heard of. I do think that's true.
Yeah, that's a nice headline, that. I like that. And carrying anything, I believe. I think we're built to carry stuff. And I think carrying essentially is a way of getting your upper body involved in your cardio, which then when you don't carry something, you've built a strong, you know, I just call it posture. I really do. Or posture or structure. You know, your structure when you're running is so important, so that you don't end up dragging your upper body around like dead weight.
Yeah.
And building carries into your training is a surefire way of strengthening all of those postural structural muscles, so that when you do run with no weight, like, you've got a long way to go before that structure breaks down.
Yeah. That's great.
Thanks so much.
Thanks
mate.
So much, Andrew. Thank you. Cheers.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Andrew Tracy, and to you, of course, for listening.
Go on the internet, Google Runners World UK subscription. You'll find an offer there. I'm not even sure what the offer is anymore, but it's bound to be brilliant. What happens then is your magazine arrives at your front door once a month, every month of the year. 12 issues. Is it a hoax? Is it an online scam? No, it's not. It's real deal. You need to get on there, sign up, get that magazine to your front door. Subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Share it amongst your friends. We love a good bit of feedback. Whatever you need to do to make it happen, just get on board. Thank you for listening. You'll hear from us next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.